Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. We start the program today with the Dakota Political Junkies as we dive right into the political headlines in the state this week. Seth Tupper is with the Rapid City Journal. Dana Ferguson is with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Seth, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Thanks for having me.
And Dana, thanks for being here as well.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
Dana, let's start with you, and let's start with the congressional race. New poll numbers sort of give us an idea of what we might be looking at November 8th. Do you want to give us a rundown of that?
Sure. So we saw the last couple of days polls coming out of Tello, and it looks like the Republicans are going to win it. Thune has a pretty significant margin of victory in that poll over Democrat Jay Williams. It's 65-27 per their 400-person poll. And Kristi Noem also seems to have an advantage over Paula Hawks, 59-35. So I don't know that it's necessarily surprising given the political makeup of the state and the largely Republican makeup, but it is interesting to have some concrete numbers to look at ahead of Election Day.
Give me an idea how deep down those polls went. What else were they looking for? Any subcategories there, Dana?
There were. I thought it was interesting that they broke them down by gender and party affiliation, too, looking at favorability of the candidates. Paula Hawks did better among women, whereas Kristi Noem did better among men. And I thought it was interesting, too, that they did some looking into what voters thought of statements from the Republicans on Donald Trump. Obviously, he's been in the headlines quite a bit recently for some comments that he made a couple of weeks ago and then the follow-up. But it seems like voters are pretty split on the candidates' positions on whether they will support Trump and whether they sort of thought his comments were appropriate.
Seth, not a surprise to see people split on the person and issues of Donald Trump.
No, and you know, whatever people think of Senator Thune's kind of maybe waffling, some people would call it, saying, you know, he wanted Trump to withdraw, but then he would still vote for him if he didn't. And you know, whatever people think of that, he's, according to this poll, he's up 38 points. So obviously they don't, you know, make all that much of it. And it, you know, it really hasn't affected his popularity in that race apparently, whatsoever. And then when you look at, you know, Paula Hawks being down 24 points to, Kristi Noem, you know, Paula Hawks has tried to, use Donald Trump, I guess, as an issue in that race and Noem's support of Trump as an issue. But again, with a 24-point spread, according to this poll, doesn't appear that she's been able to gain much traction on that.
What does, Seth, what does success look like for a Democratic candidate in this particular in this particular election year and going forward? Because what happens after Election Day for people like Hawks and Williams then?
Well, that is an interesting question. I looked back at Noem's past races, and you know, with Paula Hawks, according to this poll, polling at 35%, that would just be a tick above Corinna Robinson, who got 34% of the vote in 2014. Matt Varilek, the Democrat who ran against Noem in 2012, got 43%. So I would think any kind of mild success for her, she would need to do, you know, obviously better than Robinson and try to pull somewhere in that area where at least where Varilek did in 2012. And you know, Paula Hawks has said, I've read some comments from her, that she would be willing, you know, perhaps in the future to make another run at office, whether it's the House or something else. So, you know, she's certainly gotten her name out there this time, but I mean, if she doesn't do as well as either of the last two candidates, it may be a tall order to try to come back and make another run.
Dana, let's talk about those final debates. Now, we've wrapped up our presidential debates. We've wrapped up, I believe, unless there's one I'm missing, debates between the congressional candidates as well. You have probably followed those fairly closely. What stood out to you in the conversations between Noem and Hawks that might matter after Election Day?
Yeah, as Seth indicated, I think that Paula Hawks has really made that effort to bring up her opposition to Donald Trump, and that's had, it looks like, some success, especially among female voters. Obviously, last week she came out, too, and shared her sexual assault story and indicated that Representative Noem's continued support of Donald Trump was disappointing to her and could be considered insulting to others who might have gone through similar situations. Other issues that have continued to come up between those two candidates, obviously Representative Noem's decision to lead the Agriculture Committee for the Ways and Means Committee. That's something we've heard about throughout their campaign, an ongoing issue, and I think something that voters care about, as well as their very different positions on the Affordable Care Act, on trade, and just a couple of other issues.
Seth, anything from the Thune-Williams debates or conversations in that race that sort of stands out as something that might be significant for Thune going forward, presuming that the poll numbers are correct and he's looking at a good night?
Not really, no. Just to be brutally honest, nothing really stands out. You know, he's got a 38-point lead. In that debate, you saw a guy in John Thune who has done many debates before, a seasoned politician, and he came off that way, and you saw a guy in Jay Williams who is not, you know, as experienced in debates and not as seasoned a politician as John Thune, and you really saw that in the debates and saw some of why probably John Thune has a 38-point lead. And the other, I think, you know, my big takeaway from Noem Hawks was that, you know, Hawks did show herself as somebody who can really stand toe-to-toe with somebody like Kristi Noem. And if Paula Hawks is taking a long view of this, I think that's something she really needed to show. She did show that. Obviously, we'll see if it does her any good on Election Day. But I think she performed well in the debates as, again, going up against an incumbent, somebody who has more experience than her, et cetera. I thought she came off, did very well.
Dana, do you concur with the assessment on Thune-Williams?
I do. I think we really saw someone who's really marketed himself as a non-politician, sort of coming off as a non-politician. He was extremely enthusiastic in the debates, and I think that energy certainly came across, but Jay Williams didn't seem to hold himself the same way that I think Senator Thune did, and you could tell he doesn't quite have the same amount of debate experience.
Let's bring Gary Johnson into the conversation then, Libertarian candidate for president. I spoke with him yesterday, not on the show, but we recorded it and put that online, and we'll broadcast it later. Seth, he's coming out to Rapid City. What's the vibe for Libertarian candidates in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, it's been really interesting, you know, kind of in the same way that there was a small but really vocal and dedicated group in support of Bernie Sanders out here in the Democratic primary, maybe to a little bit lesser extent, but still very visible and very vocal. There's a group that has kind of formed to support the Johnson-Weld ticket, and Stan Adelstein, the former legislator from out here, is a supporter of Johnson-Weld, views them as an alternative to Donald Trump. Adelstein's a Republican, has been very vocal, saying that he is not going to vote for Trump, and I think he sees Johnson-Weld as the logical alternative to Donald Trump. So he has been at these events. Mr. Weld has appeared out here already in a couple of places, and Stan Adelstein was at those events. So he appears to be kind of the one driving it, but it has resulted in, when you drive around Rapid City, there are Johnson-Weld billboards here. There are people standing on corners holding Johnson-Weld signs. You don't really see that for Hillary Clinton. You do see some Trump signs. But I would say that Johnson-Weld is by far the most visible presidential campaign in Rapid City. And, you know, in a race, I think in the Kellogg polls, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they showed Trump 44% and Clinton 37% in South Dakota. Mm-hmm. 5% margin of error, and you throw that in, you know, there's an it's an outside shot. But if the Johnson-Weld ticket could peel away enough Republican votes, you could see a situation, possibly, probably a slim chance, but that Hillary Clinton might be able to sneak in there and win South Dakota with help from Johnson-Weld.
Seth, is there a key message or policy initiative that the Johnson-Weld campaign, you think, it resonates with South Dakotans? Are you seeing the signs? Do you have any idea what's really behind them other than just an alternative to Donald Trump?
I think it's what you just said, honestly.
That's it.
I think it's a lot of Republicans that are uncomfortable with Donald Trump but don't want to vote for the Democratic candidate, don't want to vote for Hillary Clinton. And so they're looking at this as an opportunity to maybe be able to cast a vote that isn't going to make them feel guilty, to be able to vote for somebody that still shares a lot of their beliefs about limited government and things like that, but to not have to vote for Donald Trump.
So the privacy of that moment when you cast your ballot, nobody's going to know you're going to feel guilty or not based on your own choice. Dana, let's talk about ballot selfies and why that has suddenly become, I think, a rather delightful diversion in the political coverage in the last week.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more fun than some of the stories
right?
we've all been reading and hearing about elsewhere, but just so South Dakota voters know, you can't take a ballot selfie looking at you millennials like myself. It's against state statute. So I think there's certainly going to be a desire to share how you vote, or maybe there won't be, just sharing that you're unhappy with your choice. But that is something that legally you're not supposed to be doing. I don't know that everyone knows that, and it seems a little bit silly. I don't know that anyone is going to go after you if you do actually do that, but it's been advised by the Secretary of State's office that you keep your vote to yourself. You can wear your sticker proudly. You can share on Facebook or whatever you want to do, but posting a ballot selfie is a bad idea.
And there's a foundational logic behind this. I was reading Nationwide Laws the other day, and they said it's in South Dakota there's a concern about voter coercion. Someone tells you you have to cast a certain vote, and you need to document that you did so, and you take your selfie. So there's some logic behind it. Seth, what do you think about the ballot selfie?
Yeah, I can see the logic of that. I mean, for example, if you're somebody whose boss goes to vote and they take a picture and show you how, look, I voted for this, you know, I mean, there's opportunities there to exert, to put pressure on somebody. Another, by the way, sort of quirky election law that we had a story about, our Tom Griffith wrote recently. There's a law in the books in South Dakota that you're not supposed to take any more than 10 minutes to cast your ballot, which is one of these strange laws that the Secretary of State says isn't enforced, which I don't know why it's on the books then. But anyway, our Tom did kind of a first-person story on that, and it took him 20 minutes to read every word on his ballot.
And he was probably more prepared than... More prepared than some people. Dana, I'm walking around. I'm talking to people. They don't even know there's ballot questions. Other people are tired of hearing about it. We've got a couple minutes left. Let's just talk about some of the work that you've got coming up on the ballot questions that surround payday lending. What are you looking into now?
Yeah, I'm going to be writing a story this weekend looking at the payday lending back and forth that South Dakotans have been hearing about for probably a year and a half now. Just taking a look at how these loans can impact people, how much actual debt they're taking on as a result of those high interest rates, and the continued efforts by the industry to maintain their presence in South Dakota. We're also going to run the ballot measure list and explainer again, because I think it's very important that voters know what they're going to see. And you can take that with you. You can take the paper with you to the polling place. I know that in Minnehaha County, cell phones are not allowed, so Googling the measures isn't going to be an option. But definitely something to look into. And as Seth said, there apparently is a time constraint, and I know that people out here are taking a lot longer than 10 minutes. So just be prepared.
Be prepared. So you're looking at the human impact of payday lending on individuals. Did you get a, I know the Argus and you were putting on Facebook and social media a call for some people to share their stories. Did you get a good, pretty good response to that request?
No, honestly, we didn't. Hmm. We got a couple of people who were willing to come forward. I think that there is a lot of shame associated with taking out those loans. Whether or not people should actually be ashamed, I don't know. But there haven't been a lot of people who feel comfortable disclosing the experience they had, and a lot of the backers of the measures aiming to actually cap the interest rates don't really want to put people in a position where they could be blackmailed or have anything happen to them as a result of sharing their experience.
Sort of a dirty business. The whole, you know, as we have these conversations, there's some messiness behind this one for sure.
Absolutely.
Looking forward to that on Sunday, Dana?
Yes, that's correct.
Sunday Argus Leader. You can find that at argusleader.com. Dana Ferguson, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Seth Tupper, what do you got coming up? I know you've done a lot of work that's beyond the political scope lately. I hope to have you back and talk about that as well in the future. Great stuff coming out of the Rapid City Journal as well.
Yeah, well, we hope to keep it coming up. We will have hopefully an update on the wild horse sanctuary situation up in Lantry this weekend that I know a lot of people are curious about. So that
can find that. Find that at rapidcityjournal.com. There's lots of articles there to go ahead and read, and hopefully we'll have Seth on to talk about that in the future. Seth, thanks for being here as well.
You're welcome.